On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR, Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, welcome to On the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today, I've got right now with us on the line is Humberto Sanchez. Humberto is the Condo Committee Chair for the Cyber Citizens for Justice, which is a Florida-based organization, and he's also their Public Relations Director, so he's a very busy man. He's also a council member with LULAC, and we're going to find out exactly what's been going on. Hi, Humberto. Thanks for joining us today.
PR Director, and you're a council member of LULAC, correct?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am a council member of LULAC, and I'm also the deputy director for the elderly for state of Florida, LULAC state of Florida.
So you're a busy man.
Pretty much, we try to be on top of these issues in the area of consumer protection, and I'm very sensitive to this kind of stuff. And when we hear all these horror stories that are happening all over the states, it is worrisome. You know, it is worrisome because when you hear that a property has been taken away from someone, and most of the time arbitrarily. I was just reading this morning a case up in the West Coast that a person was basically foreclosed on for some fines. You know, and we really think about this, and I think about, for example, what happened in countries like Afghanistan, and who are these groups of terrorists. You know, I stop for a second and think that this is a very direct threat to what our nation is all about, and what you have is a group of people out there with unlimited power, with no ethical measurement whatsoever, and basically they are some type of society terrorists. I mean, I really can literally, you know, state it that way because, you know, in our country, and I have to be honest with you, I was raised here, and I'm coming from a communist country, and this is very, very similar to what communist countries and totalitarian systems practice, and it is unfortunate, very unfortunate, that this is happening in the USA. I mean, sometimes I stop for a second and really ask myself, you know, is this really happening to these people? You know, what happened to the consumer protection? What happened to our elected officials? You know, they know that this is going on all over the states. It's not only Florida. In Florida and Texas being the worst of the two, I believe, because certainly there's a lot of elderly people living in Florida, and also we have also the issue of language barrier, which sometimes play, you know, a role on this. And when we see people taking advantage of other people, you know, with no accountability whatsoever, you know, one has to, you know, stand up and speak up. And that's basically what I'm doing. And I'm going to continue doing it until somebody listens. And I don't know, I'm not even sure that at one point if our states don't listen, maybe we have to go to our federal government and say, you know, listen, you know, you're we're a great nation, you're supposed to protect us with different laws, and if the state, if our state doesn't protect us, then we'll have to look the other way and find out, you know, what can our federal government can do because our states are not protecting us at all.
But in Florida, Humberto, you have managed to get somebody to listen to you. You've been holding task force hearings and select committee hearings recently, right?
Yes. Fortunately, in Florida, and I guess due to the tremendous problem and due to the outrageous amount of horror stories, I believe we have been able to gather the attention of our legislators. And right now there are two select committees going on throughout Florida, one being chaired by our legislator Julio Robina, who happens to be a very good politician, and at least you know, his track record speaks for himself. Is the other committee that has to do with also homeowners association living in not in condos but in just regular associations, was called and created by the governor, Jeb Bush. You know, I believe that this as a result of the overwhelming problems that are going on all over the state. And as you know, this state, you know, there's a lot of elderly living in Florida. There's a lot of people that come here to retire. And I'll be honest with you, I'm certain that at one point or another, if this is not stopped, we're not going to see too many senior citizens moving to Florida for retirement.
But do they know about it when they come down there, Humberto?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I've seen, you know, I follow this story very, very close, not only in Dade County, but also throughout the whole state of Florida and also in other states as well through, you know, other network that we have.
That's right.
And let me tell you, you know, people say, well, when you enter into a condominium or when you enter into a homeowners association where you're signing, you know, you're signing a contract and you're surrendering your constitutional rights. Well, I'm having a very hard time, you know, thinking that I am surrendering my constitutional right because I bought a home, which is supposed to be a homestead, which is supposed to be sacred in our country traditionally. And I haven't found one single person that will admit that they purchased this property knowing, okay, that they were giving away their constitutional rights. And then, you have a lot of this association fining people, okay? Fining people for you know, whatever they decide, when their covenant documents don't even allow them to fine people, and they are, and people are losing property over these fines because then they foreclose on people just because people don't know and people don't have the necessary financial backing to hire an attorney and go to courts on this, because as you know, just to hire an attorney to look into this kind of matter for you. You're probably looking at $4,000 or $5,000 just in retaining.
Yeah, it's very, very expensive to do that. Can I go back to something you just said a moment ago about the elderly moving to Florida and not really understanding what they're getting into? Is this fraud? Are these houses being sold to them fraudulently, do you think?
Well, let me tell you what I have noticed. I've noticed that a lot of these properties that get foreclosed for one reason or another have a lot of equity in it. So it wouldn't be surprised to me. I wouldn't be surprised at all, okay, if this was something well organized.
You think it's a scam?
I sincerely and with all responsibility, I sincerely think that this is an organized thing. And perhaps led by some manager's network or by some attorney's network. And I'd like to be very honest about this. There's no doubt there are good managers, and there's no doubt that there are good attorneys out there. Well, unfortunately, what I see is that that is rather the exception and not the rule. So when you say that, I have to responsibly say that I am not surprised if this is part of a scam, very, very well organized, to take the properties away from people. Because, like I say, a very peculiar thing about this is that most of these properties that are foreclosed have plenty of equity on it.
Is there any one particular group that's targeted more than any other group, do you think? If you have people who have a lot of equity, is it because of recent depreciation in property? I mean, we've seen an explosion on the national level. Or is it because these are the elderly or who've sort of paid off over throughout the years, paid off their...
In my opinion, especially in Florida, there's two targets. One being the elderly, because obviously these are people that are living in fixed income. And there's the other group, which I believe is also most affected in Florida, which is are those Hispanic. As you know, and Hispanic, number one, because, you know, they also have some certain limitation of income, and also because of the language barrier.
Yeah.
Now, I also have to point out that whoever buys a condominium, you know, let's face it, whoever buys a condominium is because he cannot afford to go out and buy a single family home. That in Florida, average child, probably now, it's especially in South Florida, it's probably over $220,000. You know, not too many people qualify to buy a property like that. So whoever buys a condominium, you know, basically the main reason is because that's the only thing they can afford. Now, saying that, you know, both groups have limited resources as far as financing resources is concerned. So these people, they are aware of the fact that these two groups, they're not going to be able to fight back. The possibility is slim to none. Then on top of that, you have regulatory agency, such as the one that we have in our state, that in some instances, they are rather an obstruction rather than a solution, because, you know, they have this whole bureaucracy going on, paid for by the condo owners, and that's another issue that I must pass to talk about, because most people don't even know that they are maintaining a state agency, paying from their own pocket. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's $4 per door right now.
This is just for the condos.
Just for the condos.
Okay.
In addition to whatever the developers pay for filing the documents and all that. So I'm doing a little research right now as we speak, and I haven't found one person that is aware that they pay a state regulatory agency from their own pocket. And what do they get? What do we get in return? I don't see anything in return. So these are a group of people that are getting hit from all over the place. I mean, from different direction. They get hit from the state. They get hit from this bad managers. They get hit from this bad lawyers. They get hit by this corrupt boards. Which, by the way, you know, again, they are good boards. There's no question about that. A condominium is as good as the board is. But when you see, for example, corruption in government, and even when we have all these safeguards in place, there's still corruption in government. So you can only imagine what goes on in a private type of government with no accountability whatsoever, okay? With, you know, they can get away with murder, and they probably know that nothing is going to happen to them. Even when they broadly come out and take money away, I mean, I was looking at a case the other day. For the first time, I think that somebody was prosecuted for taking, I can't remember the amount, but it was $300,000-something, I believe. And, you know, his sentence was only parole, you know.
It's ridiculous. I agree. I know. I've been watching this across the country, and it's absolutely ridiculous because they're not treating these as crimes. They're treating them as private governments, you know, and this is what happens. Hey,
no,
go to civil court.
And the other worst, to make things worse, you turn to the police, oh, we don't get involved in that. You turn to the state attorney, oh,
yes.
We don't know about that.
Yeah.
You turn into the law enforcement, state law enforcement. We don't get involved in that. I mean, everywhere you turn, people don't know about it. We don't want to know about it. Even our judges, in my opinion, I don't think they have the necessary education to handle these cases. Because what I've seen and what I've heard, it's really frightening. It's really, really frightening. So, you know, it is important that not only the homeowners themselves, but also the development industry, which has a very vested interest in this area, that it is important for them to come to the table as well, and let's try to fix this mess, because otherwise, let me tell you, I am certain that at one point or another, people are going to say, condominium? No, please. I don't want to know about that.
What do you think, what is it going to take to fix this mess, as you put it, Humberto?
Well, number one, we are going to need, the number one thing that I believe we need to get rid of this mess is accountability. We need to hold people accountable for wrongdoing. We need to prosecute people for wrongdoing, just like politicians are prosecuted, just like any other citizen is prosecuted for any violation of the law or any wrongdoing. Or if you take some money, you know, if you're involved in corruption, hey, you know, you're going to be held to some type of accountability. You know, we need to hold people personally responsible. And sometimes I hear, you know, the excuse as well, you know, you're not going to be able to find then board members to serve on the board, blah 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 blah. Well, let me tell you something. I find that so cheap, and I'm sorry about the expression, but because you see, I wouldn't have a problem to be part of the board, even if I'm going to be held personally accountable for any wrongdoing.
Well,
why? Because I am not going to be practicing that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And my question always to the industry when they say that is, you know, what is it you're trying to do? Make sure that you've got people on there who are not going to follow the law? I mean, is that what they're basically saying?
Well, that's basically what it all comes down to.
Exactly.
You see? That's why the industry, I believe, they're very reluctant for any changes, because they know that right now they can get away with murder. They know, and I can, and again, I think that this is something very well organized. That we have only discovered the tip of the iceberg. Okay, because what's coming up every day now that these hearings are going on are beyond comprehensive. I mean, sometimes I question myself. You know, are we living in America? Is this America? Or, you know, because, listen, some of these things can really be compared to terrorism.
Can we go back to something you said earlier? And you were talking about the elderly being targeted. You were also talking about the Hispanics. Now, I'm going to guess, and I'm only guessing here, Humberto, that the elderly are the ones who presumably have the no mortgage, the mortgage-free homes. So there's a lot of equity built up in their property, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Now, you also were saying about the Hispanics who have the language problem, who've got limited resources. Why would they be targeted? Why are they being victimized?
Well, very simple. In the real world, you know, people don't know exactly how this whole mess works, because the way that this covenants are set up, they can't be any more legal. I mean, it's almost a constitution, and with a web of legal roads, and let me tell you, I don't think that anyone is capable of being able to understand how this works. On the other hand, people don't know, for example, I'm just going to use this as an example. People are being fined for things.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even know that unless this fines are in your covenant as part of the powers that the board may have, they can be fined. In the other hand, you see that they are fined, and then you see that in some instances they are foreclosed for these fines. And so language barrier is one big of a problem. See? Because there are people in need of housing.
But do you
remember,
think...
Remember, just in the last two or three years in Dade County alone, more than probably a million persons have arrived from other countries.
Wow.
Yeah, problems, political problems in Venezuela, in Argentina, in Colombia, and all over the place. And so I believe that they're the other group. The other section of the U.S., which I believe it's been very, very, the problem is very serious, is in Texas. And we in LULAC intend to address this issue very soon. And we're working in a resolution right now because if you look at the amount of foreclosures in Texas, it is beyond any comprehensive mind.
Well, I think that we have some numbers in Texas, but I think that those numbers are replicated across the country. It's that no one has been able to pull them all together. I tried to, very superficially here in Northern Virginia, and the thing is they use non-judicial foreclosures, so there are no court records. And the only way to track that is if you know the person who's been foreclosed on.
That's the other issue.
You see, yeah.
Some of these things go unnoticed because
there's
no due process. And I mean, I personally know of a case for $106 this property was sold under the carpet from this person.
Yeah.
And the new buyer knocked on the door and said, "Here, hey, I'm the new owner here. You buy me out or you get out." You know?
How much, Humberto, do you think is you know, with the Hispanics, because they want to get them out of the neighborhood? I mean, is this discrimination? Is this, are the associations circumventing fair housing laws, do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, recently, one of the major law offices in Florida was hit with a class action lawsuit in federal court. And they were, you know, several violations. I just recently got a hold of some documents from a person that filed some complaint with the Fair Housing Act. And, you know, they have people, you know, you have boards up there prohibiting child or children to play in certain areas, to be here or there. You know, they think that they can, you see, they're so accustomed to get away with murder at a state level that they think they can do the same thing at the federal level, and it just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. We're running out of time, believe it or not, but I wanted to very quickly ask you, you went to the Senate, the Select Committee hearing or the Task Force hearing?
No, the House Select Committee hearing. That's on the condominium.
That's on the condominium. Was it well attended?
I'm sorry?
Was it well attended? Did you have a lot of people there?
I believe that even with the limitation of advertising, which was very limited, by the way.
that's a favorite trick.
About 350, 400 people were there.
How many of them were allowed to speak?
Everyone was allowed to speak.
Everyone was allowed to speak.
Everyone was allowed.
A lot of horror stories?
We wouldn't even have time to go through these horror stories in a week, but let me tell you, I could see the faces of the legislators. Some of these lawmakers didn't even believe what they were listening to.
Is there a recording somehow, a record of the testimonies?
Yes, the hearings are being recorded, and they're being placed as a public disclosure. So yes, the minutes are available.
So we can get a hold of those and find out what's going on?
Oh, absolutely, you can. Yes.
That sounds great. Well, you're doing a very good job down there. I know that you're a busy man, and as I said, you're with CCFJ, Cyber Citizens for Justice. You're also with LULAC. You're also with another organization?
Other organizations, yes, but not necessarily consumer protection area.
But thank you very much for everything you're doing, Humberto, because even though you're doing it down in Florida, it's going to help all of us across the country.
Oh, absolutely. I'll thank you for the exposure because, you know, you've been doing a great job. And you know, what you said a minute ago is very true. People not knowing what's going on here or there. When this whole thing really blows up, we're going to find more than we think that's out there.
I think you're right. I thank you very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to join us and talk to us and keep up the good work. And for the rest of you, don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by Bob Janauskas, who's also in Florida and who attended the task force hearings, and we're going to hear all about that.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Humberto. You too.
Bye.
Finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game.
those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, welcome to On the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us during the second half of On the Commons is our friend Bob Janauskas from Ocala, Florida. Bob attended the other set of hearings that were held in the northern part of Florida, I think. I'm not too swift on my geography here. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm thrilled that you were able to join us.
Well, I heard you mention the DBPR Homeowners Association Task Force, and we did indeed attend that meeting up in Tallahassee.
Who put that on?
Actually, it was a result of our persistence with Governor Bush, and we failed to pass a mandated property reform task force during the 2003 session. Actually, we pulled the bill after the Senate tried to snooker us. The last day of the session, we told our House sponsor to pull the bill because it didn't represent our interests and those of the homeowners living in deed-restricted communities, so we had to eat crow on that deal. But Governor Bush decided to instruct the Secretary of the DB, the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. I'm so used to these acronyms, I could spout them off.
I know, and we don't think that other
people
may
don't really know what I'm talking about, and that's why I said the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. And so we attended the first meeting on September the 24th up in Tallahassee.
And what happened there?
Well, first off, we were disappointed that the task force composition of same didn't really meet our intent to have a balanced forum between the stakeholders and industry partisans and consumer activists. There are only two homeowners that I know of that are on the DPPR task force, and that's a president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, Jan Bergeman, who you know very well.
Yes.
And another homeowner from the Fort Lauderdale area. So we were inclined to tell the task force chair that we felt the scales of justice were tilted in the wrong direction.
How many people on the task force?
There's 15 on the task force, and it's debatable as to whether there are two or three homeowner representatives on the task force. We know two for sure. We're not sure of the third.
How does that work out?
So, and of course, we have representation from the Community Association Institute.
How many of them?
There's at least one, but underlying there may be more. You know, because most of these attorneys and developers and stakeholders of one sort or another
they're all members.
Might be members of community association, but their one representative is on the task force, and he's titled as representing the Community Association Institute. So you want to get an idea what happened was, you know.
Yeah, I'd love to know what happened.
Well, in addition to the fact that it's tilted, like all these other study commissions happen to be when they have them, and they've had them in the past.
Yes.
This was supposed to be an organizational meeting. Now, in most organizational meetings, which are being held by Robert's Rules of Order, they elect the chair and the co-chair if that's applicable, and then they discuss the issues that they think the task force would bring to the table during this meeting and subsequent meetings. But in this case, The chair and the co-chair were already selected when we got there, and they had two items already on the agenda. One was to deal with flags, and the other was the definition of homeowners associations to determine whether or not, as defined in Florida law, Chapter 720, the definition should be expanded to include other entities. And right away that rings a bell for me.
Would you say that again, please? The definition
for the second issue that was on the agenda. Was the definition of homeowners associations as defined in Chapter 720, which is the governing body of the community. And they wanted to discuss whether or not this should be expanded to include other entities like mandatory master associations. And one they didn't quite mention, which I tried to nip in the bud when I made my presentation, was to include community association management companies in the definition. So
that's what I thought you said. That's incredible.
Well, that was my supposition, or presumption, let's say, that I thought that this was maybe a way for that entity to get their get themselves included in the definition of the governing body of a homeowners association. And like I said, that was my impression. Not necessarily a true fact, but that's what I felt.
Okay.
And part of my presentation, I told the task force that under no circumstances should a community association management company be included in the definition. They're created to give a service, and they should remain licensed and regulated and provide the service, period.
And not be part of the clients. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Like I said, nobody said that but me. But I wasn't sure that that's... Matter of fact, there aren't any community association management companies on the task force, which they're not too happy about. And I kind of don't blame them. I mean, if you could put a CAI guy sitting right next to our president, Jan Bergerman, on the task force, you could certainly include a community association manager representative.
What's the objective of the task force?
Actually, their charge, their mandate is to explore the current laws as they relate to homeowners associations that exist in, and I'll say, adult and residential communities, which are sometimes referred to as developments, subdivisions, gated communities, that kind of thing. And to see whether or not there is a need to amend the current law to protect homeowners' rights as envisioned by Governor Jeb Bush. And I'm not sure what that means because that was never explained.
Are there any hearings being held? Are ordinary homeowners allowed to come in and testify?
These meetings are held under the Sunshine Laws of the state of Florida. It's a public meeting. Anybody could come to testify, but their testimony is limited to the particular items that are on the agenda. And the chair provides 3 minutes for public comment. But he was very liberal in his time. I know I ran over a little bit. I had a brief, very terse statement to make, first of all, and then I went into the first issue, which was flags, and then I got up again to speak on the second issue. And he also allowed me to rebut certain comments that were made by a couple of the task force members that were not totally factually correct. And that was one of them was about the legislature's failure to pass the legislation when indeed we pulled a bill, our own bill, from the floor of the House the last day of the session. And the other thing I suggested was we would like to see, as part of the final recommendation of the DBPR, a recommendation to create a Planned Unit Development Advisory Council.
And what would the council do?
The council would do, or would be, an extension of the task force. In other words, the task force will finish its mandate in January, and they are only going to make recommendations to the governor, the president of the Senate, and the speaker of the House. They are not able to, obviously, legislate, so it will be interesting to see where the bills will come from to incorporate any recommendations they might make and any others that we might want to put into the bill later on. But the Planned Development Advisory Council would be an extension after the task force finishes its work. And this was part of the bills that we filed in 2002 and 2003, which was to create a mandated property reform task force, so that we want to be able to sit at the same table with the stakeholders and the industry partisans to continue to discuss the problems that exist with the way that homeowners associations are created by developers, and all of the power that the homeowners associations are given statutorily, rather than regulating the way that they operate. I give you a good example of that.
Okay.
There are several provisions in Chapter 720, which is the homeowners association law, that don't go far enough to provide the guidance that the Homeowners Association Board of Directors have in order to properly manage their communities. And they relate the power as authorized by the governing documents. In other words, the legislature has given all the power to a set of documents that a developer has created as the governing law of the state of Florida.
That is a problem. I do agree.
That's a big problem. I'm just looking here. As a matter of fact, my community is transitioned. I live in a residential community, not an adult community.
Okay, would you differentiate that? Because you're the only one who ever talks about adult communities.
Well, an adult community is one in which it could be 55-plus or a gated community, a development, whatever. There's all kinds of names for that type of community. But those types of communities are the ones that have all sorts of facilities, amenities. They have a general swimming pool. They have a clubhouse. The bocce courts, tennis courts, golf courses, those kinds of things. Whereas a residential deed-restricted community with a mandatory homeowners association has none of those amenities.
So there are no amenities.
Pardon?
In a residential community, there are no amenities.
There are no amenities. Although we do pay a yearly fee to our homeowners association.
For what?
It is only for streetlights. Maintenance of common areas.
What are the common areas?
Common areas are like...
for instance, what do you have in your association?
Well, we have like a small plot of land that we own near the well where the utility provides us our water. So that strip of land is a common area which we have to maintain on a regular basis. In addition, we have our entrances. We have three entrances in our community. So we have to maintain those. And also we have water retention basins to catch overflow of water during storms, which we also maintain. But
that's it.
That's it.
So you don't have a pool?
I have my own pool in my backyard.
And you don't have tennis courts?
No.
You don't have community centers?
No.
You don't have all of that stuff?
Right.
So why do you need the association?
Because the developers created it. Now, the only way that we could do away with the association is if the membership votes to dissolve it, or if nobody wanted to serve on the board and we didn't file a state report, we would automatically be dissolved by the state, involuntary dissolution. But let me get back to the task force for a minute.
All right.
Because I think I got off subject here for you.
Okay, well, I think I got you off subject, but that's okay.
Well, as long as you're satisfied,
I am perfectly happy. Go on.
And I hope your listeners will be satisfied also. I really appreciate the fact that you've been at this for so long, and you're giving people an opportunity, a forum, to discuss these issues.
Well, I think, you know, Bob, the problems are universal. And for so many years, I mean, I didn't know you existed. You've been doing this for 10 years. I've been doing this for 15 years. And, you know, everybody was isolated, divide and conquer. Well, through the magic of Internet, I guess, we've kind of found each other. And through On the Commons, we kind of get together and we talk about our common issues. And
well, you'll recall when we first met on the Internet, and you and Fred and Joni. Jan and what's his name there in Texas?
Joni.
Joni and then the guy in Texas.
Steve.
Anyway, the fearsome foursome, you remember, there was four of us initially.
Yeah. Yep.
And we had a lot of discussions on the Internet, and we didn't always agree with each other, but one thing we did agree about was that the HOA concept is flawed. And we just needed to stay on this issue to try to resolve many of the existing problems that have been going on and on for years and years, because the stakeholders, which are the builders and the developers and the real estate people and the attorneys that represent these homeowners associations, they simply have the power and the influence to sit at the table up in Tallahassee, in all the other state capitals where the bills are written. They write the bills, and then lo and behold, the attorneys are financially enriched because they have to defend the bills the language that they wrote.
That's true.
Isn't that strange?
Well, you know, they've sort of written themselves a recession-proof career, basically, is what it amounts to. And in California, they were very upfront about it, and they said that.
Well, there's a lot of good people around the country that are trying to do the right thing to protect homeowners' rights. And you know that I mentioned how many times that we should have a national organization. But finally, I came to my senses and realized if you didn't have a statewide organization, you certainly wouldn't have any success forming a national association.
That's right.
You know, organization.
That's right.
And cyber citizens, I've been involved in several organizations over the years. I founded one of my own, up here in Marion County, and we were instrumental in getting legislation passed. And then I was president of another from down in Miami. And now I'm a co-founder of Cyber Citizens for Justice, and I have to admit that Cyber Citizens for Justice, with the leadership that it has, is the best organization that I've ever been involved with, because there are so many people around the state of Florida that are willing to work the issues and bring the issues to the table.
Well,
it's amazing. We're in about, our organization is probably in between 40% and 50% of the counties in the state of Florida, of which there are 67. So I think we have representative members in about 30 of the counties.
Wow.
And we formed alliances this year with three other organizations. Concerned Homeowners in Partnership up here in Marion County, the Florida the Consumer Advocacy Network, the Property Owners Associations in the villages, and the Fair Housing group down in Palm Beach.
Well, don't forget LULAC.
Well, LULAC is LULAC is part of the picture, and Humberto is deeply involved in LULAC from the standpoint that he is making sure that his friends in that organization know about all the abuses and the foreclosures and the way that people are being treated in the condos and associations down in the Miami area, and this is a national organization.
That's right.
Which is coming to the fray, and I think we're going to see some good things coming out of that group too.
Oh, I think so. I think Cyber Citizens has done an incredible job. I think you guys.
Well, you know,
really
we got a guy up there in St. Augustine by the name of Jan Bergman.
Yeah.
and believe me, I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for him. He is a fantastic individual, and there are so many people in Cyber Citizens for Justice that are willing to work. That's the big key.
That is
one or two
key.
People can steer the boat, but if you don't have any workers, you can't get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, you guys have a great, you've done a phenomenal job down there.
Now, get back to the task force for a second.
Yes.
They did make a decision to make a couple of recommendations.
Okay.
One was to include flags in the HOA law as that which was passed by the condos, that's allowed in the condos and was passed during the last legislative session, which means you could fly military flags on certain days of the year. And they also included the current Florida flag could be flown at any time. But despite our efforts to try to convince them that they needed to include a freestanding flagpole that an owner could install on his own property, they didn't recognize the meaning of that, so they didn't include flagpoles. And they left the definition of homeowners associations as is currently in Chapter 720, which basically says if you're going to be a homeowners association, you're going to be governing your own community.
So
on October the 17th, we'll be heading down to Miami. The task force will be down there. And the two issues that are slated to be discussed on the agenda are, recall or removal of board of directors, which we don't have provisions for in our HOA law. And a real biggie is alternative dispute resolution, mediation and or arbitration, which we don't have in HOA law either.
You want to be very careful with that.
Okay.
And, in fact, there's an article on my website. I haven't had a chance to put up a whole lot.
All right.
But I would highly recommend...
Talk a little louder, please.
I would highly recommend that you go and read that.
Okay.
Because you want to be very careful with ADR. It's not all it's cracked up to be, and it's not cheaper for the homeowner.
Okay, give me a little cue.
Well, we're running out of time, but...
Okay, I'll go to your website, and I'll read it there.
Go to onthecommons.com, and...
Okay.
And, you know, I'll be happy to email it to you. But you want to be very, very careful with that, with ADR.
Well, I'll certainly take that under advisement because I respect what you say.
Well, thank you. And thanks so much for joining us, Bob. Good luck to you. And thanks for sticking with it. I know you've quit and almost quit a number of times.
Sure. Thanks again for having me on. And I appreciate it very much. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Go get them.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Stay tuned and stay free.